Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Danny Cannell, back to throw, first down, the pass is complete, tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done tackling it. 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Happy Friday. Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. We got a full jam-packed episode. Scott Pollard is going to join us. Former NBA guy, Kansas guy, is going to hit us on all topics we need to get to. We're going to do a little Sweet 16 recap, my Noles, do some NBA. But do you guys know I almost didn't make it to the pod this morning?
I was
going to
say, why don't you start off by telling everyone where you're at, Danny?
So I am in South Beach, and I kicked off Ultra. Ultra is a music festival. It's all weekend long. South Beach is insane, by the way. Like, the prices are off the chart. The traffic's off the chart. But I kicked it off. Like, I was the launch party with Diplo last night. Like, he was DJing a private party. Very exclusive.
Are you a
and
Diplo
we
fan?
Out late. It was a late, late night. Hannah knows it was late, right?
Danny texted the group chat, the podcast group chat, at 11:50 p.m. saying, wait, hold on. I got to read it.
It was late.
He goes, it's 50-50 if I'm up for the pod. If not, Rajah can hold it down.
Rajah was already asleep at 11:50. I'd been asleep for an hour.
I know, but it made me laugh because at 11:50 p.m., Danny, that's when I'm normally making my way down to Miami to go out. And you were calling
it. I remember those days. Midnight is a big accomplishment, but you guys should be proud of me. You guys should be proud that I was out that late. Yeah, I posted some obnoxious stories on Instagram, too.
Oh,
that
I got to check
bad.
Those out. I haven't been there yet.
There were a few cocktails that were taken back. So
it's
a good night
for you, FSU and Diplo.
I was celebrating all of about 20 minutes until after the game was over,
and then
I was done.
Guys, we got to get pumped for tonight's games. We don't even have time to talk about last night's. I'm so stressed out about tonight.
You're fully aware of what, like, that song, like, what a cane would use that song for, correct? Like, what a hurricane.
I'm aware. I did College Game Day radio this past year. I was down there for the Notre Dame game, and I was down there at 6 a.m., and they were greeting me with that. And I'm like, we're not even playing, you guys. And they gave the old, F the Seminoles.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
my childhood.
Really?
Yeah, it's F, U, Seminoles.
All right, well, we're going to get to the Florida State game. But the Cinderella story, as great a story as Florida State is, it's fun for me. The Cinderella story continues with Loyola Chicago, and they bounced Nevada 69-68. It was a fantastic game, crazy finish, and it's all because of one sister, Jean.
Well, I already told them as they came off the court, great game, and they said, one of them said to me, Clayton said, we broke your bracket, sister Jean. I said, I don't care that you broke my back bracket. I'm ready for the next one.
So sister Jean is all the rage, but she doesn't even she bounced them in the I think she had them beating Miami, and then I think that was it. I think she didn't have that much faith. Like,
she had them out last night.
Oh,
she did.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So she is, but it's funny how, like, she's taken by storm. Like, I think you ask college basketball fans who they can name on Loyola Chicago, it's probably zero players.
Sister Jean. They
can name her, like, off the bat. Like, she's on SportsCenter, she's on our show. Like, everyone is leading with her. But how impressive is it, though, Rajah, for you to see what Loyola's doing? I feel like they were misseeded at 11. I feel like they were a better team than that. But still, to get this far, and I get some of it's the luck of the draw, and Nevada's not the strongest win, but still, it's going to be a run that these guys remember.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, it's pretty fantastic what they're doing. They've won three games by 4 points, I believe. That's really hard to do in a tournament. You don't know these teams. You haven't seen them. You know, they're not conference foes where you kind of know what they do inside and out. And so you're kind of, you know, preparing on the fly, kind of, you know, flying by the seat of your pants, if you will. And to boot, like, I think just about every time they line up, and this is not, I'm not trying to throw any shade at Loyola. Like, it's a testament to Loyola. They're usually outmanned. Like, from the other team's perspective, they're usually, like, less talented than the other team. And so, you know, last night when I watched with Caleb and Cody Martin, like, those are two pro style players, and Nevada had multiple pros. Coach Musselman over there, like, they were running pro sets. They just physically looked like they were outmanned. And the stuff that some of the kids from Nevada was doing, like, when you're watching that with a professional eye, you're like, man, those kids, like, they're better players all around than the Loyola kids. Loyola's got some tough kids. They made some plays. They're very disciplined. They defend the heck out of you. But when you just watch, like, pro skill sets or skill sets, you were like, you know, that they look different, you know? Like, it's a different mm-hmm. style of ball. But they get it done, and it's a testament to, like, you know, when you watch teams play and they execute the heck out of their stuff and they've all bought into what their coach is preaching and the culture that you know, that the university or the organization is preaching, and it's 100% buy-in from all of those kids, and their run is just a testament to what you can do when you get that across the board from your team.
So we talked a little bit about strategy when Houston and Michigan were playing and they didn't defend the inbounds pass and Michigan hit the big shot. So last night, Loyola was up one with 36 seconds left.
I would have extended.
You would have.
I would have extended. I thought Musselman in that situation, and again, I don't want to second guess, but what it looked like was that's what you do in a pro game. Mm-hmm. You know, you used to have timeouts. They've even changed it now in the pro game where I think you only get two timeouts in the last couple minutes, so you can't just keep calling timeouts and advancing the ball. Shot clock would have been at about six, I think it was.
Yeah.
You don't roll the dice on that with college players. You still got to advance the ball. You don't get to bring it in at half court if you burn a timeout. So they got to get it up court, get a quality look. I thought he should have extended the game there. I thought pro coaches would let that run out and play it like that. Mm-hmm. College coaches, I think you have to extend that game.
All right. So they move. So Loyola continues their run. They're going to face Kansas State because Kansas State went up. They beat Kentucky. Kentucky was a trendy team that people were jumping on the bandwagon. And they were up and down all year. Yes, they were talented, but they were very inexperienced. And I thought it was interesting because Coach Cal was talking about it before the game, and he was talking about just what I was saying. Everybody was buying into Kentucky, and he's like, I hope my players aren't listening. And he pulled a page from Nick Saban's playbook and said, you know, I hope they're not drinking the poison. If they don't, we'll be fine. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I don't think his players got into it. I just think they kind of showed what they were all year. I also think Kansas State's a pretty good squad.
Yeah, I think that this was a pretty disappointing. This was a really big deal for Kentucky in terms of, you know, what they could have done.
They got gifted the road to the final four.
It was wide open. Now, I'm not saying that this is their most deserving team to get to the Final Four, but it was pretty wide open if they had just got through Kansas State. And I'm going to disagree a little bit because I don't think Kansas State's that good. Like, I think they're okay. I don't think they're great. I mean, I think they're better than okay, but I don't think they're a heavyweight team, if you will. Kentucky just, you know, that formula of get the young one and done guy, have them gel throughout the year, develop their skill set so that they're performing well in March is great, provided you hit on the one and done guys. And I feel like this year his one and done, like McDonald's All-Americans, aren't as good as they've been in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, like you were talking mm-hmm. about, like, I mean, Anthony Davis, John Wall, who else? What's the kid? Devin Booker, DeMarcus Cousins, like the names like that. And then, you know, when you watch last night, like Kevin Knox is all right, but he'll be a pro one day, but not anybody who's going to light the world on fire right now. And the kid, what's his name? What was the kid's name? I can't even pronounce it. Gilgeous
Alexander.
Like, those are all right players, but they're not, you know, they're not take the nation by storm. I'm a lottery pick type of player. And, you know, that showed last night. Like, they didn't mm-hmm. – what'd they shoot? They shot 38% from the field. They lost to a team that shot 35% from the field. I thought it showed their youth. And if you're not going to have the freshman that is a first-round, like, lottery pick securely, then you have to have some veteran leadership. And they don't have either one of those. And I thought, you know, that the game last night kind of proved that. It bore that out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So they get bounced. So the Elite Eight matchup to get to the Final Four. This is nuts. Kansas State is a 1-point favorite over Loyola. You think Kansas State is trash, basically. You just told me. Who do you like? No, but seriously, who do you like? Do you think Kansas State will – do you think the Loyola Cinderella run will end, or do you like Kansas State?
I'm
kind of going with the I'm going with the Magic. I think Sister Jean's got the direct line to upstairs.
Hey, I hear you, bro. I'll go with you. I will, because I don't think Kansas State is fantastic. Part of me thinks that the slippers are going to, you know, disappear on them at some point, but they're solid, man. Like, I don't mean to take anything away from them. I don't think they've got pros littered across like their roster, but they They certainly execute the hell out of their stuff, and they're tough. They make big shots, and they defend. So I'll go with you.
All right, let's move out to the West region, where it was late, but my Noles came up big, and I was dying because I was at this Diplo concert, and I couldn't actually physically watch the game, but I was pulling it up, and I kept on, you know, doing the update on the scores. And when they were up by 9 at half, I'm like, what's going on? Like, they must be playing really well. But I also feel, and then they pretty much, you know, kind of ran away with it. They were in control of the game. You know, Gonzaga cut it to 4 or 5 kind of late, you know, with 7 or 8 minutes left. But Florida State just continued to take every punch that they took. This is where I feel like the NCAA tournament, as much fun as it is to watch, that – and I like Debo's note on our podcast rundown, because he says FSU defense holds Zags to just 34% shooting, 25% from three, and they force 13 turnovers. But I also think there's something where if you get a team who gets an off night, like, they're screwed, because it's one game and you're out. Like, the best team doesn't always win. And if you can get hot at the right time and carry some momentum and get some belief in yourself, you can have a run like Florida State is having. So that they're in the Elite Eight for the first time since 93 when I was there. I remember watching that team. I was a sophomore. And my boy Charlie Ward was playing, you know, guard, and Bob Sura was lighting it up from all over. Never saw a shot that he didn't like. Sam Cassell was playing as well. Rodney Dobart, like, they had some studs, and it was an exciting time. But I can't believe it's been that long. I was like, are we sure they didn't get one other run? But it was insane, and it's gonna be a ton of fun. And Tallahassee's going nuts. But I look at it, and I'm like, hey, why not? Why not us? That's their motto.
Yeah, I think, you know, they believe that. I'm happy for Coach Hamilton. I mean, he deserves it. He's been grinding for a long time. What do you call it? Bonuses for him winning playoff. Tournament games. So that's cool. But you hit the nail on the head. Like in a Sweet 16 tournament, one and done, any kind of tournament, like NCAA tournament, any tournament, the best team doesn't always win. It's the hottest team. It's the team that navigates the minefield the best in terms of having a poor shooting performance. What I'll say about last night though is, like, Gonzaga, I don't know how much it was them just having an off night as much as it was Florida State, like, defending the heck out of them. Like, Florida State, I didn't realize how big they were. They start a 7'4 center from Chad. They come off the bench with another 7-footer. Then they come in with, like, 6'10 and 6'8. They had 9 blocks last night. They are a really, really big team. And when you have 7'4 behind you, as a guard or a wing player, it allows you to completely crowd whoever it is that has the ball on the perimeter, because there's no fear of what he may do if he beats you off the bounce. Because you know you've got that ultimate, like, eraser behind you, which is 7'4", 7'1". You know, when you don't have rim protection, it kind of makes you pause as a defender, because you don't want to get beat. You know, if you get beat off the bounce, the probability of him getting to the hoop and laying it up is pretty high. So with that security blanket, and they've got multiple ones at Florida State, it allows all those long, rangy, athletic defenders to climb all the way up into the saddle defensively and just pressure the heck out of the ball. And as an offensive player, space is your friend. Like, when people take your space away, it speeds up, like, your processing. It speeds up your decision-making. And all of that, like, fractionally sped up causes mistakes. And so, you know, I thought you saw a Florida State team last night just completely take Gonzaga out of what they like to do, and really get under their skin, get up underneath them, force them to the basket, and then those guys were erasing shots.
So the other game last night that was, and the team that Florida State's going to face, is Michigan. Michigan, this was a shocker to me, because I like Texas A&M, and this is sort of in college basketball all season long, right? You saw Texas A&M blow out North Carolina. I thought they looked like a really good, long team, and then they go out and get blasted by Michigan. So I think Michigan now, with Kentucky, who was the third favorite to go in to win the tournament behind Villanova and Duke, I think Michigan's got as good a chance to anyone to win it.
Yeah, Michigan looks really good. They're a top 20 defensive efficiency team. Coach Beilein is just, he's really good. I mean, he's really, really good. They were interesting. It looked like a bad matchup for Texas A&M. And I think it speaks to, like, when you're talking about the tournament format, when it's one and done, you know, if you could come out and catch somebody sleepwalking and you're ready to go and you hit them in the mouth early, even if you're evenly matched, typically the team that gets hit in the mouth is going to be in trouble. Like, because, you know, the clock starts wearing on you. If you can get up by 15 or something like that. Now, obviously, there have been a lot of comebacks in this tournament, so that's not always true to form. But you want to come out and you want to hit first. And I felt like Michigan came out and popped Texas A&M in the mouth. And then Texas A&M is big and long, but they don't look super athletic. And Michigan just looked like they had a bunch of guys that could do stuff off the bounce. Texas A&M didn't really appear to have those guys that could beat their man off the dribble like Michigan did. So I think two things. Number one, they came out, they were the more focused, more ready to play team. And I really, Coach Beilein's a great coach. So I think Michigan, I think you're right. Michigan's got good as chance as anybody. It's going to be really interesting to see those two teams go up because, like, again, Florida State is big and strong, and they'll get up and defend the heck out of you too. So that should be a knockdown, drag out kind of game.
Do you guys think
Sorry,
do you guys think that anyone had the bracket right?
I was thinking that this morning.
Like, who? Because I saw somebody tweeted it, like,
no way.
Oh, if you had your bracket right, you're just lying.
There's
like,
no
you're
way.
Completely lying.
No, no one had it. It was bounced like after the first game. Like, no one has them right. It always, it's a farce. No one will ever get it right.
No, like not one person in the world.
Are insane. It's just, you won't, no one will, like, it just won't happen. Like, Warren Buffett does the $1 billion bracket challenge, which is a genius marketing thing because that $1 billion is as safe as bet as anything. No one's ever going to see it because they're completely blown up. All right, so I'm going to take the Noles. It sounds, Roger, you like Michigan or you like Florida State moving on to the Final Four?
I'm going to take Florida State, bro. I'm going to ride with the Seminoles. Yeah.
All right, I think you're doing some Jedi mind tricks to get that hurricane blood inside of you, but we'll see. It should be fun, though. And if they go, I'm going to be obnoxious next week if they do win and get to the Final Four, if I'm not obnoxious enough already. All right, so tonight's games, we got Clemson versus Kansas. We're going to talk about that with Scott Pollard because he played there and he knows it pretty good. But Hannah should be fired up. Syracuse versus Duke. What do you think Syracuse has to do to keep it close? Because I think Duke is really playing well.
They have to do everything. If you look at the past, like the last time we played Duke, it's so embarrassing. It's bad.
Was it bad?
Yeah. No, it was bad. I hope Jim Boeheim prepped them well.
Syracuse has to make shots. They got to make shots. The zone, look, they're going to have to – the zone is going to do what the zone does. They've got to rebound out of that zone because – Duke can beat you up on the glass with Marvin Bagley III and what's the other kid's name? I forget his name. He's a freshman too. He's a little bit he's bigger than Marvin Bagley. Yeah, Wendell Carter. Yeah, Wendell Carter Jr. They'll go after the boards, and sometimes it's really hard to rebound out of a zone because you're not matched up, so you can't get a body on a guy. Those long rebounds pop out, and that can be challenging. So they've got to make shots and they got to rebound. I don't see it. Obviously, I think Duke is a better team. Obviously, you know, the record speaks to that. The seeding speaks to that.
Fine.
Right? But Syracuse and Boeheim in the tournament, like, it's hard to bet against them. And you know, the zone, I think Duke is better prepared to play against the zone than a lot of teams because Duke plays a lot of zone. So they practice against a lot of zone. If you're a team that only plays man-to-man and that's all you practice against – for a whole year, it's unrealistic to think that like 5 days worth of zone work offensively is going to get you prepared enough to play against Syracuse. But Duke probably works zone offense every day in practice because they play a lot of zone defensively. So I think Duke will be all right.
All right, let's roll quickly through the other two games. What about West Virginia versus Villanova? You got a feel there?
Villanova. West Virginia's, no, they're good. They got good guards too. West Virginia's got good guards. They get up, they pressure. But I think Villanova, a team like that, that's got vets that have been there. They've won championships. I think they handle that pressure. I think they're poised enough. I think they'll win.
What about Texas Tech versus Purdue? They got Isaac Haas. He's trying to get some brace figured out where he can play with it on them, but it's been a struggle for them. They're losing their rim protector. Do you think Purdue can get past for Texas Tech?
I don't know those teams that well, man, but anytime you lose a guy that's that important to you, it could be trouble. So I'm going to go with Texas Tech just because I don't know well enough.
Here's what's happening with Hannah.
We begin with the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship because non-professional golfer Tony Romo made his PGA Tour debut there, shooting a 5 over 77. He was even through the front nine, but in typical Tony Romo fashion, he choked late. As another former NFL quarterback turned broadcaster, Danny, you think you could beat him on the links?
He's a really good player. I would not, especially not when I'm with my back issues. You guys are gonna be walking around like an 85-year-old man. He's pretty good, but it's great. Like, it's great for CBS. It's great for golf. But he has no chance. Like, no chance to even advance in rounds. I'm just impressed that he finished the round. He's a really good golfer, but it's a whole nother level to think he can compete on the PGA Tour. I don't think he thinks he can. I think if you can't, it's like Russell Wilson going to camp with spring training with the New York Yankees. Like, if you could do it, I would do it. But it doesn't mean he's going to be in Major League Baseball. And it's the same with Romo. It doesn't mean he's going to be in the PGA Tour.
My man Danny Cannell will whoop that ass, Tony Romo.
There we go.
Steph Curry did it last year.
Save that drop. Save that drop.
All right, sneaker talk. When Steph Curry returns to the court from ankle injury, he'll be wearing his Under Armour Curry 5 low tops. Steph's quote sounds like a marketing pitch. He says, quote, "It's kind of ironic that I made the switch this season considering my ankle issues, but the shoe is stable and engineered to maximize my performance." Curry expected to return Friday night versus the Hawks after a 6-game absence.
That's interesting. My first thought was, since my boys like really love the Steph Currys, the high top version is really tight around the ankle. It's got this like sleeve type of thing, and they can barely get their foot in them. They're really, really narrow. So like they got to like almost break the shoe to get them on. So with the ankle problems, I'm imagining he wears pretty big braces. So maybe this is just a way of him like being able to accommodate the braces, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense.
140-79. No, that's not a UConn women's basketball final. It's the NBA, and it's what the Hornets did to the Grizzlies last night. Kemba Walker pours in 46 points in just three quarters of action as Charlotte put together the sixth largest win in NBA history, 61 points.
They shouldn't even get their paychecks. That's all. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's absurd. I don't even know what to say. You lost by 60. Yep. What do you say to that?
Don't get them paid.
Right.
Anfernee Simons, the number 7 basketball recruit in the 2018 class, according to 24/7 Sports, has decided to forego college eligibility and declare for the NBA draft. He's eligible for the draft because he will turn 19 in June and will be 1 year removed from his high school graduation. Simons spent the past season at IMG Academy in Florida.
Hey, I hear that. Why? Look, you guys know where I stand. If you're ready to go, you're going to be a lottery pick or just outside the lottery, and it's guaranteed millions of dollars, go. There's really no need to fake it and go to college basketball for a year. Your heart's not in it. You're wasting everybody's time. Like, just go.
Busy Thursday of NFL moves. Jason Pierre-Paul dealt to the Bucks. Jets agree to contract with Terrell Pryor. Mike Wallace to the Eagles. And ageless running back Frank Gore headed to hometown Dolphins. Danny, anything stand out there?
I love Frank Gore coming back to Miami. That's fantastic. And then the JPP move, moving him out of New York, it does feel like the Giants are doing a pretty good job building around Eli, but like clearing space. They're switching their defensive scheme to a 3-4. Dave Gettleman, the GM, he's shaking things up. But I think the next move to watch is, does he do anything with Odell Beckham Jr.? Does he extend him? Does he move him? Because I think he's one of the most polarizing players in football and most talented. But I'm curious to see if he continues this shakeup and see if it goes.
I just want to see Odell Beckham Jr. dance more. Do you guys see him in Sterling Shepard and Chanel Iman's wedding?
No.
Oh, yeah. He's always dancing.
He killed it. Stop. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, he's got some moves. He can get out there and do it. All right, we teased him off the top. We're pumped up to have Scott Pollard joining the show. He's going to help us break down a little NBA, a little brackets. But first of all, we have to start. Because you played at Kansas plays a really tough Clemson squad. What do you think they have to do to get past them?
The same thing we've been doing. Devontae has to be great. We have to shoot well from the three-point line. We cannot possibly rely on our big guys. Doak is banged up. Udoka is banged up. De Silva has been playing admirably, considering he was still playing at his high school team in December of this season. But our big kids are our kids, and they're not really reliable. So we've got to shoot well from the three-point line. It seems elementary, but that's been the biggest staple of our season this year. If we shoot well from the three-point line, we got a chance. If we don't, it's going to be really tough to beat Clemson.
So talk to me. Like, I never got to go to an NCAA tournament, Scott. You've been to a bunch, obviously. Like, does the focus shift at all from going regular season to the tournament? How hard is that? And then number two, as you advance round to round and you get that break between the 32 and the Sweet 16, how hard is that to stay focused, stay poised, and not get too excited for the moment?
You answered my question. I played for Roy Williams, the head coach of North Carolina now. He was my head coach at Kansas. And we were in the Sweet 16 all four of my years. We got to the Final Eight once. And it is absolutely exhilarating to get past the conference tournament, which is it's just a moneymaker. The conference tournament, you either win the regular season or you don't, but then you have a conference tournament that's just to make money for the conference, because what's the big deal? I already proved during the season whether we're the best team in the league or we're not. And then you got to go play three more games sometimes to try to win the conference tournament. So there's that, and that's like a speed bump in the way of the big dance. And then you finally get to the dance, and you're through the moon. And Roy was a heck of a motivator. I was always ready to just rip the floor up off the ground every time we were about to play. And so the first two games, it's really a matter of trying to calm down that first weekend and not be too excited. And then going into the Sweet 16, it was hard not to. I mean, Roy would practice us, but he wouldn't really run us. You know, you don't want to get the thoroughbreds all tired out right before you the big race. So I think if anything, we probably should have practiced harder. or maybe I should have just run more to get off some of that nervous energy, because leading into my senior year, we were ranked number one from start to finish. We got to the tournament, and an Arizona team who wasn't very good during the regular season in the Pac-10 at the time, now it's Pac-12, they came in and they just caught fire in the tournament. They won six games in a row, and I played with Mike Bibby in the NBA for three seasons out in Sacramento, and great teammate, but he killed us. Then they just got hot at the right time, and I think I was a big part of the reason we lost. I think I was in foul trouble early, which was common throughout my whole career, but I think I got four fouls with about 19 minutes to go in the second half. So I watched most of the second half, and I watched Arizona beat up on us. And we made a good comeback and almost got a tying three-pointer to send it into overtime. Not that I remember this or anything. Right. So it's only been 21 years. It's like it was yesterday.
But I think it's funny that you were – do you feel like you think about that more than being an NBA champion? Because I think it's a fascinating aspect of, like, the way you remember things. Like, I still get bothered by a high school, you know, state championship game more so than I enjoy winning a national championship at Florida State. Like, do you feel a similar way, or do you feel pretty good about your ring that you've got?
Both, but I absolutely remember my high school, not my sophomore and junior year so much in San Diego, but in high school, I moved to the state of Washington for my senior year, and the team I happened to be moving into had just been in the state playoffs and gone really deep, and then we were picked to win it all. And yeah, there's so many memories from that team, and I only lived there for like 8 months. So yeah, there's that. And then, you know, losing to Arizona when, you know, I had just been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and then we go and choke against Arizona and we don't win. So yeah, there's a whole lot there that I remember, and But as you guys know, you get to choose where you go to high school or college. You get to choose that. In the pros, you don't go, hey, I want to play for this team. Unless you're, say, Kobe Bryant and Charlotte drafts you, and you go, nah, I'm going to L.A. for the rest of us, you don't get to choose which team you get to play for. So I think it does mean a whole lot more when it's, I chose to go to this high school, or I was growing up and I have those memories, or I chose to go to this college and that's who I wanted to play for, and that was who I wanted to play with. And so when you have that control, there's a lot more emotional attachment. As a pro, again, as you guys well know, you get traded around, you're a pork belly, you know. The billionaires are like, oh, I like this one this month, but I don't like that one this month, you know. And you just got to go, and wherever you get traded to or wherever you're able to sign that you think is a good fit, but rarely do professional athletes get to choose and have that emotional bond with a franchise and a city. And get to stay there as long as they want to. You get cut, you get traded, you get your body breaks down, whatever it is. So as much as I love my championship ring, I've been very vocal about the fact that I wear that championship ring for all the teams. Like, for example, when I played for Sacramento, I wanted to be there. I re-signed with Sacramento, but then they still traded me. But I wear my championship ring for all the teams I was on, dating back to high school, that were coulda, woulda, shouldas. And didn't get that ultimate goal of a world championship or a high school state championship or an NCAA national championship. So I feel very fortunate to have always been on really good teams. My rookie year in Detroit was the only year I didn't play in the postseason, dating back to high school. So I was always part of good teams, and I felt lucky. But at the same time, a tremendous amount of disappointment and a lot of memories, like I just described with that Arizona loss. But then there's also that exhilaration of getting the ultimate goal of winning a championship. So the Boston Celtics. Paul Pierce really won me that ring, so thanks, Paul.
Paul's a great guy. Hey, so yeah, those are some pretty dope teams, and you were blessed to play on some really good teams. And so my question would be, which one of those was the best team not to win a championship? 97 Jayhawks, the 02 Kings, the 04 Pacers, or the 07 Cavs? Or is there a team I'm forgetting?
No, those are all the ones. I have to go back to college. I chose to be there. I wanted to be one of the first guys that helped Roy get a championship, because no one wants to win more than Roy Williams. And I love those guys. You know, there's that bond that you get with college players that we came close to that type of bond in Sacramento, that 02 team. It's got to be a tie between those two. The Pacers, I was a piece that threw in that I wasn't as big of a part because of injury of that team. And with the Cavs, yeah, I didn't play as much. I was healthy finally, but I didn't play as much. But I got to go with a tie between the 97 Arizona, the loss to the Arizona, the 97 Jayhawks, and the 02 Kings, because both of those teams, we had a brotherly love that carried on past that team.
All right, so you played 11 years in the league. You were on Survivor. Like, you seem like a bit of a renaissance man, which I like, a little bit of everything. And now you're into podcasting, where you've got your Planet Pollard podcast, which everyone can find at The Pros Club on Twitter, at The Pros Club. What types of stuff are you talking about on the pod?
It's Planet Pollard. It's kind of whatever we want to do. I've done Suburb Dad drinking wine and talking stuff where I just have a buddy over and we start talking about the wine, or we've done a tequila tasting. I've interviewed people from Survivor, but really what it is I tell stories that people don't know. You know, you guys, I'm sure you've heard the same things I've heard from your small circle of friends, where they're like, man, these stories are ridiculous. You should tell these to everybody else, because people like us that just, you know, you get to play in the professional leagues for a while. You have stories and you have access to, you know, whatever it is. You get to meet people or celebrities or billionaires or whatever it is. And to us, it's just our life. And you kind of sometimes, not that you get caught up in it like it's an ego thing, but just that you don't exactly remember all of the details of how unique that is. And then you start telling one of these stories to your friends and they're like, share this. That is hilarious, or it's amazing, or whatever. And so that's kind of what Planet Pollard podcast is then, is me kind of just telling the behind-the-scenes stories with whoever I'm on with, whether it's Survivor. I'm doing one. I'm going to do one with my wife, actually, where she kind of tells what happened while I'm gone, you know, that people don't realize you're gone for almost 7 weeks on Survivor. So some of the family stories. And that's basically what Planet Pollard podcast is. I tell some terrible jokes. I cuss a little bit. And tell some stories that people, you know, may not know, or usually don't know about what it was like to be a Kansas Jayhawk, or what it was like to be a Sacramento King, or what it was like to be on Survivor, and some of the stuff that you didn't see on TV. And so we have a lot of fun with it. We're I think we're 13 or 14 episodes in, and I think it's going so pretty well so far.
So, Scott, look, it's along the lines of those stories, because this has always fascinated me, I picked Jamal Tinsley's brain a little bit about it when he was in Utah with me. The night that the Malice in the Palace went down, like, I don't really want to know. Everybody's seen the video, but what led up to that? I find it hard to believe that just sparked like an ember, like something had to lead up. What was the mood that night? Was there any exchange between the teams in the hallway or before the court? Like, there had to be something leading up to that, or was it just an ember in the wind?
Well, it was an ember, and the ember was Ron Artest. I mean, there were nights and days in practice and in games where you just knew something was going to happen with Ron. And this man, his desire to win got in the way of sound judgment. And that it was the thing that I loved about him. Not that he's gone. I love about him and hated about him as a teammate, because there were times where he would disconnect, and you could see it. And you're like, well, all right, well, I guess we're not going to win today, or we're not going to finish practice today, or he's going to get kicked out of practice today, because you could just tell that Ron was going to do something. But he had been fighting with Ben Wallace a little bit during the game. Not a whole lot, but just you could tell. And it escalated, and all of us. It wasn't just them. But there was other players that were getting into it. I think Jermaine and Ben Wallace were getting into it a little bit. And then it was kind of a bad call on Ron Artest. And he did something that was incredibly passive-aggressive. And he went and laid down on the scorer's table. Well, obviously, in Detroit, people didn't like that. Oh, you got a bad call, crybaby. And he went and laid down right in the middle of the arena on the scorer's table at center court. Well, of course, that pissed off the fans. One of them threw a beer at him, and then Ronnie went Ronnie. You know, it's like when people get into a tiger cage and the tiger eats them. That tiger didn't go crazy, like Chris Rock said. That tiger went tiger. Right, well, right. Don't throw a beer can at Ron Artest and expect not to get your ass kicked. So he went up there and unfortunately started beating up the wrong guy, and then Steven Jackson, and, you know, the melee ensued. But yeah, there was an ember. That's my long answer to your short question. And the ember was Ron, and I don't blame him by any means. It's a team thing. It wasn't just his fault, but that was the spark. That lit it. But my biggest memory of that, and I just want to say this really quick, my biggest memory of that night, among all of them, there's two that I have. One of them is that Jermaine O'Neal almost killed a man, and that man is lucky to be alive because there was something on the ground, whether it was beer or soda or whatever. But that's the only reason this man is alive, because Jermaine O'Neal is a large human like myself, and there's a reason there's weight classes in boxing, because when you're over 250 pounds, one haymaker can end a person. And this guy came running down out of the stands, and you could see it in his face. You know, he's like, I'm going to get him. And then as soon as he gets down to floor level with us, he looks up, and I happen to be right there standing next to Jermaine. And you could see it in his face. Oh, my, they're a lot bigger in person. But he still didn't want to back down. So he, like, put up his dukes, like, whatever. Like, what are you going to do? And Jermaine just pulls back with just a haymaker, and he's going to end this man. Like, this isn't like, I'm going to scare him. This is, you're going to die. And luckily for this guy, Jermaine slipped, and probably lucky for Jermaine's pocketbook, but Jermaine slipped on whatever and still and missed him, but he still hit him right on the shoulder. Instead of hitting him on the chin, which could have, you know, just erased this man, he hit him on the shoulder and still knocked him straight on his butt. And the other one, there's more of that, but the other memory is the one that I don't know that you guys heard. A lot of people have, some people haven't. Is after we get everybody, and this is a while, there's fights in the locker room, you know, not like fist fights, but there's coaches going at it with each other and with the players trying to calm everybody down. Well, we finally get calmed down after all this. It took a while. But we finally get in the locker room. The game's called. There's only like a minute left. They call the game. We get settled down in the locker room. Finally get some quiet. And Ron Artest goes, y'all think we're going to get fined for this?
That's fantastic.
Scott, that 2008 team still in the headlines, and yes, because of the 10-year anniversary, but mainly because of the drama involving Ray Allen. Where do you side in this ongoing battle here?
You know, I'm in a no-win situation. I had career-ending surgery in February of that season. I played until they wouldn't let me play anymore, and they forced me to get surgery. So, you know, some people discount me as a member of that team. Some people, you know, they say, oh, well, you didn't even play in the playoffs. Well, they just, because they weren't fans, they just Google and they say, oh, he didn't play in the playoffs, so he must have sucked. They don't know the backstory. But, you know, I've seen some of the headlines where it's like, oh, the Celtics are getting together. The Celtics organization has never once reached out to me anyway about a reunion. So either they don't consider me part of the team, which I doubt that, or it's just Rondo talking to some of the guys and saying, hey, do you want to go on vacation together or whatever? And it's turned into all this drama, which obviously is good for headlines and all that. I really don't care if the Celtics were to say we're having a reunion, an official team reunion, and they were, like, bringing us all back. Yeah, I'm in. But I don't keep in touch with most of the players I played with, whether it's in college or high school or the NBA, not because I don't want to. When we see each other, it's great. When I was in Boston last fall, I saw a couple of guys. We hugged it out. There's no animosity. It's just that I'm not going to take time out of my day to just go on vacation with a few of the team guys from that team. When it comes down to taking sides, I don't take sides like that because, again, I don't really care that much. But knowing each man individually and having been a teammate with them the same amount of time, one season, Ray was always much more mature, more classy. Rondo was more of a very shy, introverted, reactionary type character. On maturity level, 10 years away from having spoken to either one of them, really, I would go with Ray because we're about the same age, and Rondo's a little younger, and I tend to trust maturity over impulse. But, I really don't care. It seems as though if I were to say, well, Rondo this and Rondo that, he'd probably fire back like he did with Ray. Well, he just wrote this book because he wants to use my name to get his book sold. We're teammates. We're all each other's story. And so it's hard to tell your story unless you're involving some of your former teammates, right? Mm-hmm. So a mature person would say that, see that, and go, hey, Ray's not trying to make money off of me. He's trying to make money off of his story, which includes me. So there's a lot of different layers to it. My point is, ultimately, I'm outside looking in at this point. I don't talk to either one of them. I don't really care if there's a feud. Again, I love the memories of being on that team. I feel like I was part of that team. I know personally I pulled Rondo aside several times throughout that season to calm him down because he was like, I'm leaving. I quit. Doc Rivers is riding me. That's not his voice. That's me doing a bad Rondo impression. But he didn't handle Doc Rivers coaching very well. And there were times where I'd have to pull him aside and say, hey, you know, he was a point guard. He's a floor general and he sees things in you and he wants you to be better because he knows what he's talking about. He's not pulling Kevin Garnett aside to tell him to do stuff because you didn't play that spot, but he played your spot. He knows your spot pretty well. So maybe you should listen. And it kind of calmed him down sometimes, but again, I got long answers for short questions.
I love it. All right. So we're going to do rapid fire to finish it off. We're going to do our superlatives. We do it with everybody. We'll have some fun with them. All right. So who has – now, if you Google Scott Pollard and do images, you had some hair and you had some different looks. Like you had mohawks, you had bleach, you had long, you had everything. Who has the best hair in the NBA right now?
Steven Adams.
Nice. Do you ever regret the double ponytail look?
No, I'm actually growing it out right now to bring it back.
Nice. If you had to pick one guy and you could put him on Survivor and you said he's going to win, an NBA guy, who would it be?
Current or anybody?
Anybody. Anybody all time.
I have to go with our era. I have to go with Steve Nash. He's crafty. He's smart. He'd probably catch people off guard. He's not freakishly huge, so he might be able to throw it off. Like, oh, I didn't. Not an NBA player. Like, I had no choice. So I'm going to go with Steve Nash.
All right. So my podcast partners do not know this, but I actually sent in an audition video to Survivor, and I never heard back. Like, somewhere there is a tape that exists of me trying to sell myself to Survivor, the Survivor
no.
crew. Yeah, it's out there. What did you do to get on? Like, how did that happen?
Well, apparently I am bigger and uglier and more tattooed than you. You reached out to me. Actually, that is a fact. I was actually in 2010. I was out there soaking my sorrows of a failed TV pilot I was trying to push out there that my idea was stolen and changed sports and became Ballers. But not bitter about that at all. I was actually out, and they approached me then, and true story, my personal life was not in a place at that point in my life where I could leave for about 7 weeks. And so I told the casting agent there, I was like, yeah, I can't leave for that long. But, you know, maybe in the future because I was getting divorced. I got divorced. And then when they reached out to me again in 2014, I was married to a good person and in a much better place in my personal life that I could leave. And I did so. And so I got nothing for you. People are always like, oh, what's your audition video? How'd you get in? They reached out to me, and that happens a lot. If you look at this season, the Ghost Island season, it looks like there's no normal people. It looks like they're all like handpicked models, or, you know, there's no like normal folks at this season. And shockingly enough, I think it's actually pretty entertaining. I don't watch all of them, but this one, I'm kind of hooked on it.
All right. So last question, what was more genuine, Paul Pierce's injury in the 2008 finals and him being taken off in a wheelchair, or Kevin Garnett screaming anything is possible after winning the title?
God, neither.
Okay.
I'm going with D, none of the above.
I love it. That's a perfect answer too. All right. He is Scott Pollard. Thanks for coming on. Make sure you check out his podcast, Planet Pollard. You can find it at The Pros Club on Twitter. Scott, man, we really appreciate it. Good luck to Kansas tonight too.
All right. Hey, yeah. Good. Rockchalk, Jayhawk, thanks for having me on. It was a blast, guys.
All right. Let's finish up the Stroh Strong. It's Friday, so you know what time it is.
Five-star Q&A.
What? Yeah. Okay. I don't even know how to say this guy's name.
Can you do that again?
That sounds just like when Danny said bye. Those are those lasers. Okay, anyways. I don't know how to say this guy's name. Dazadi? I don't know. Sorry.
It's a Twitter handle. It all works.
Sorry, bro. He says, what sport do you feel like you two would be equal in?
That's a good one.
Does Fortnite count?
Fortnite.
I feel like that could be an answer.
Raja's got Danny.
He would smoke me. Yeah, he would smoke me now. Do you play ping pong?
I was going to say ping pong.
Tennis. No way. You played some junior tennis. I played some junior tennis.
Tennis sounds good. Yeah. I mean, because I still go out. I'll play with my dad. My dad plays in a group, you know, every morning. I'll go out and play once in a blue moon. I'm all right. I'm not great, but I do have a background. So
That's me. That sounds like me.
There Anna, we go. Who you got there? If they played in tennis, who would you take?
Myself. Put me in the game, coach.
Put me in the game, coach.
Just kidding. I don't know who I'd take. I'm sorry. I can't answer that. I feel like that's just rude. I'm not going to answer it. From Ryan Stryker, who works here. Ryan, what are you doing? Okay, anyways.
Shout out Ryan.
He's
giving us five-star reviews.
I'm sorry. He's giving us five-star reviews. Thank you, Ryan. When are we going to see the most anticipated Hannah versus Debo matchup on the court? Guys, I've been avoiding this on purpose.
That's what I'm talking about.
I said 100K on the line. I might need some investors, but I want to play.
100K on the line.
It's got to happen. Right. Make it happen. I feel like we need a team competition. We need team bonding, team building experience. Yeah. Like, you know, when they do these corporate retreats.
You know what we should do, Danny? Like, you take one and train one for like a week. I'll take the other and train one for the other week.
Honestly,
and
then we just meet up. I'm untrainable.
I got Debo.
I have fooled everyone. I'm so bad at basketball.
That's a change up from a month ago.
Yeah, I know. Were talking cash.
Yeah,
stuff.
Because I wanted to win and I won. And now I have to admit the truth that I suck, and I'm sorry. This isn't going to happen.
Hannah. We're going to tighten that game up. Give me a week. We're going to tighten it right up.
It's a miracle potion. Okay, CB Morning. He says, Raja, where's your go-to drop point in Fortnite?
Oh.
And have you gotten so close to first where you tell your kids or wife just one more because you're right there?
I've gotten that close to first where, yes, and that happens. It's almost a daily thing where I'm like, hold on, give me.
Dinner's ready. Yeah, you're like, no.
We'll be fine. We're good.
Did you get my text the other day with the dude that's getting paid $500,000 a month to play Fortnite?
That was Ninja, right?
Ninja? Yeah, it was on CNBC. The guy's talking about he gets paid by Twitch to go out there and people watch him play. That's what you need to do, man. You're putting all this time in. Get some sponsors out there.
Yeah, right. That's all my son Dia needed to hear, because I was sitting there with my wife when I showed it to her, and he's like, that's all he wants is a YouTube channel where he can game and show people what he does. And it's like I'm fighting it with every fiber of my being, but that's all I needed. drop points depends if I'm playing squad or solo. Like if I'm playing solo, I like to go to lonely. You grab the chest at the top of the tower. There's another chest right outside the door. Then you hop down. There's a chest in the little shed right there. And then I like to run over to the racetrack where I can pick up a couple more chests on my way back into the storm, because usually the storm's forming somewhere else. If I'm playing squad, I need a little bit more loot because you can't share all that loot with four people. So I like to drop into Pleasant Park. I'm not a Tilted dude. There's too much going on in Tilted. I'm not that quick on the trigger.
You lost me so hard.
So Pleasant.
I can only talk about levels like that with Mario Kart.
All right. Lonely and Pleasant is the short answer. Lonely and Pleasant.
Okay.
Fantastic.
I don't know who this is from, but it says Allison and Debo.
This is also CB Morning, our guy.
Oh, this is also CB Morning.
All right.
My name is Hannah.
Shout out Allison.
Allison.
Shout out to your mystery woman, Allison. But anyways, I'm going to answer it like it's me. So it says, who in your top five actors or sportsmen is in your would totally date list?
Huh. Oh.
So I was Allison. Trying to. As
well,
Allison.
Like Raj's reaction there, huh?
I was trying to put together this list yesterday. You know, it was a very busy day.
It was collaborative effort. We were all talking about this.
We were. And this is just like the hardest question ever. So here we go. I've got like seven, and I'm so sorry, but that's what Allison's going to give you. Channing Tatum, because he's goofy and he can break it down. Second is Sterling K. Brown, because I like his brain. Third is Eric Decker. He doesn't need to talk.
He doesn't have a brain.
He doesn't, yeah. Fourth is Joe, the guy who's married to Sofia Vergara.
Manganiello,
because he's fine.
Who's that?
I'm sensing a theme.
Joe Manganiello?
Like the
guy. I'm sensing a theme.
Hold on. Hey,
go
five, ahead,
keep going. Yeah.
Five is Jimmy Butler. And because I just think he's so cute. Or I also like Dwayne Wade.
Wow.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
And sometimes
Secrets
Jimmy Kimmel. Is that weird?
Jimmy Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel is interesting.
I like his brain too.
There we go.
Anyways, right. guys, there
are many
go.
Brains in
what's,
that one. I'll
hold
tell
on.
You that.
What's the theme?
All right.
What's the theme? You said you sense a theme.
I thought it was like dudes that are good looking but not the smartest cats.
What? Sterling K. Brown is...
No, he was the one, but there you got Channing Tatum, who's a bag of rocks.
What? You
got
have you met him?
Mike.
You can't
like,
say that.
All right. What?
Channing Tatum is... Look at his wife. He's made good decisions, okay? Yes. He's a smart guy.
Danny, I know your wife might be around, but I'm going to hit you with my list while you're still thinking of yours. I got Mila Kunis.
She's a good one.
Zoe Kravitz.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Potential future podcast guest, Rachel D'Amita. What's up? Nicole Mazzascato. True. And I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to say Jubilee Sharp. She lives in Fort Lauderdale.
Shut
appeared
up.
On The Bachelor. Holler at me on Twitter. My number is 610.
Jubilee is a local. And I have, like,
well
I saw
done.
Jubilee once at a Heat game, and I wanted to, like, she was too far in front of me. She was, like, on courtside. But I so badly wanted to be like, hey, Jubilee, you don't
She's
know
great.
Me.
Very misunderstood.
I need
great minds.
You need to ask my great friend.
How about Debo with the Debo with the low key moves? The shout outs to
yeah,
a couple,
take that
couple options there.
There you go.
Wait, who was the second to last person on your list?
She's an Instagram actress model.
Oh, so she's not real.
She exists. She has over a million followers. That counts.
Whatever.
All right, well done. Good list.
Anyone
good
else
list.
Have a list?
Very solid list. I don't have a list.
You don't have a list?
No, I
just say your
Did wife. You guys think of him time to prep? I don't have a
list
either, but if I did, my wife obviously would be number one. Like she's number one, and there's not a close
Amazing
second.
Answer.
But it would be Gal Gadot, Jessica Biel, Jennifer Garner.
You
who's the other
type.
One you talked about? Giselle would be on there. Giselle used to be higher. She's
Jessica Alba, you said
bit.
Too.
Yeah, but then I met her, and so she's hanging on by a thread if she's in there. So that's the five.
I didn't know I had to have a list. I thought that was like.
Do you have anyone?
Oh, it's Halle Berry. Halle Berry.
Oh, Halle Berry is like on my list. Like I'll just she's so good looking.
Yeah, Halle's tough.
All right, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna since it's Friday, we got to run, but we're gonna let Raja come up with a list for next Friday.
Damn
like that's gonna be his homework for the week. Is Roger has to come up with
you
five.
And your wife can
five
prep
on a prep.
Together.
Yeah, we're good. No, I got this. I just need to. Yeah, I need to just put some thought into it.
Good stuff. Good stuff on our 5-star Q&A. Great questions from our people. You know how to. You know the drill. Go on to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Ask us anything you want. Our top fives. Fortnite questions. You name it. We got you covered. All right. Thanks for checking us out. Have a great weekend. Go follow us on Twitter and Instagram @Kennell and Bell. And good luck in your brackets.